Welcome to this podcast from the Medical Journal of Australia. My name is Sam Hunt, the MJA's news and online editor. Today we are discussing the first clinical practice guidelines for de-prescribing opioids. My two guests worked on the guidelines and they're with me now. Ailey Langford is a research fellow and pharmacist, and Associate Professor Carl Schneider is a pharmacist and a registered nurse. Both are at the University of Sydney. Ailey and Carl, thank you so much for joining me today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Sam.
Thank you for having us.
Carl, I'll start with you. You've developed what's believed to be the first clinical practice guidelines for de-prescribing opioids. Why is it that these are believed to be the first guidelines?
I guess it comes back to the idea of why we started or developed these guidelines in the first place. In 2016, the CDC in the United States developed a guideline for prescribing opioids for chronic pain. And that was developed in response to the opioid crisis in the United States. Following implementation of this guideline, what we had was unintended consequences. They included inflexible application of dose ceilings and forced and abrupt cessation of opioids in some cases. And this is due to the guidelines being poorly applied or understood at times. Consequently, there was also evidence of increasing rates of suicide and overdose after cessation of opioid treatment. Traditionally, clinical practice guidelines are focused on a disease state or a condition. If we look at these guidelines with respect to pharmacotherapy, a focus is placed on the initial prescribing of medicines to manage the condition, potentially some monitoring advice and also potentially cessation advice. However, the advice with respect to ceasing these medicines is often decreasing emphasis and in who it should be de-prescribed and how to stop prescribing. Based on those unintended consequences of that 2016 CDC guideline, Associate Professor Daniela Nidic, who leads our group, saw the potential for the development of opioid de-prescribing guidelines. We reached out to the Canadian Consortium, checked with them to see whether they'd started development of de-prescribing guidelines for opioids, and they had yet to do so. So that's why we're confident saying these are the first de-prescribing guidelines for opioids internationally.
Ailey, I'll go to you now. We'll have plenty of doctors listening to this podcast who are wondering exactly what those guidelines are and what recommendations you've made. You've made 11 recommendations. Can you take me through them?
Yes, so as you said, our guideline presents 11 recommendations, and broadly they're focusing on when to deprescribe opioids, but also how to deprescribe opioids. So our first recommendation, we have suggested developing and implementing a deprescribing plan at the point of opioid initiation. So this recommendation intends to limit opioid dose and duration, particularly when opioids are prescribed for acute pain conditions, to prevent that transition from short-term use to long-term use. Secondly, we have suggested initiating opioid deprescribing for people with chronic non-cancer pain if there is a lack of overall and clinically meaningful improvement in function, pain, or quality of life, if there's a lack of progress towards meeting agreed therapeutic goals between the patient and the prescriber, or if the person is experiencing serious or intolerable opioid adverse effects. And we've provided a similar recommendation for people with chronic cancer survivor pain. However, this is what we call a consensus recommendation because we actually found limited evidence about the benefits and harms of deprescribing opioids in that particular population. We then identified some particular clinical characteristics for which we would expect to see additional benefits from opioid deprescribing by reducing opioid-related harm risk reduction, and this included people with comorbidities such as sleep apnea, as well as those taking high doses of opioids or taking other medicines or substances with sedating effects. So that might include things like benzodiazepines. We also thought it was really important to present some recommendations about when not to deprescribe, and we've suggested avoiding deprescribing for persons taking opioids for pain or dyspnea who are nearing the end of life, because we recognised that the goals of care are quite different in this population. And similarly, we recommended against deprescribing if a person is determined to have a severe opioid use disorder. And instead, we've suggested that evidence-based care, such as medication-assisted treatment of opioid use disorder, can be provided. So then we move on to our recommendations about how to deprescribe. And to summarize these, we have recommended that opioids be tapered gradually rather than abruptly. And we also have recommended that the deprescribing plan is tailored to meet the needs of each individual. And that was because the evidence that we found for safe and effective opioid deprescribing didn't necessarily follow a really stringent protocol. Instead, the approach was adapted for the goals and preferences of the individual. And so accordingly, we've suggested regular monitoring and review of patients throughout the deprescribing process. And in the full guideline, we've actually linked out to a range of relevant references which may support in this monitoring process. Finally, we have some recommendations about what co-interventions might support opioid deprescribing. And specifically, we've suggested that multidisciplinary care or multimodal approaches, which really emphasize non-pharmacological pain management strategies, as well as self-management strategies, that these can be really effective to deprescribe opioids. And when available, these should be used.
There's a lot of learning there. Carl, what are the key things that GPs should know from this work?
Prescribing should be individualised, and I'm sure that vast majority of prescribers in Australia are already individualising therapy. But perhaps something that we could pay more focus on is how we go about not just individualising the initial prescribing, but thinking about individualising the duration and how we go about cessation of the prescribing of opioids. And that's where an deprescribing plan would come into play. So if there would be a takeaway message of these guidelines, it's to think on starting opioids, how do we go about have an end game in mind?
And Ailey, what's your takeaway from these guidelines?
The other sort of takeaway from this guideline, in addition to what Carl has already emphasised, is this concept of person-centred care and shared decision-making. I think that really speaks to what Carl mentioned earlier about some of the harms we've observed internationally from abrupt or unsolicited opioid tapering. And so really thinking about how patients and prescribers can work together to determine this deprescribing plan that Carl alluded to and making sure that it suits both the needs and preferences of the prescriber and the patient.
All right, let's look at the background to this. Carl, can you take me through how these guidelines came about and what you were looking at internationally?
A good way to think about it is that we know that medication safety is a critical component of patient safety as a whole. And there are medication misadventure with people suffering from morbidity, mortality as a result of that. In particular, there are high-risk medications and opioids are very much considered a high-risk medication. So the WHO in March 2017 launched a global patient safety challenge with the theme of medications without harm. In April 2020, the Australian Commission on Safety and Quality in Healthcare published Australia's response. They highlighted Australia's goal in reducing medication errors, adverse drug events and medication-related harm. One thing that's critical about that is they focused on reducing harm from high-risk medications, and they focused on insulin, anticoagulants, antipsychotics, and opioids. And here we have the opportunity to directly address the national response to reducing medication error and increasing patient safety.
From your perspective as a pharmacist, Ailey, how does Australia fare in terms of opioid addiction, people not being able to come off these medications?
So Australia ranks 8th internationally in terms of our overall prescribing rates at a population level. And whilst our prescribing rates are significantly less than countries such as the United States of America, we do observe significant harms from opioids. I think a statistic is that 80% of people who take these medicines long-term do experience adverse effects, which is obviously a huge number of people. And we do see 3 prescription opioid-related deaths in Australia every day. So as Carl said, I think it's clear why reducing opioid-related harm is a national health priority. But in terms of your sort of second question about how do we fare in terms of enabling people to come off these medicines, I think one thing we sort of need to consider is that success in terms of opioid deprescribing might look quite different for different people. So for some people, it might be reducing the medication completely, whereas for others, it might be reducing the dose to an amount that reduces their side effects or prevents them from experiencing some of the harms that they may have been experiencing prior. Or for others, it might just be being able to manage their pain more effectively through implementing some of these co-interventions without having to increase the dose of opioids. So I think it's hard to say what an overall picture of success would be because it does sort of need to be individualized. But I think if we can see reductions in terms of those adverse effects at the individual level, as well as some of those population harms, that would be a really great outcome.
And finally, Carl, I'll go to you. How do you see Australia faring on this opioid issue? And are there appropriate supports in place?
I think the best way to characterise it is that we already are doing a very good job to start with. We have universal healthcare coverage. We have a primary healthcare system that is, for all intents and purposes, enviable internationally. Yes, there is high pressure at the moment, especially, and there's incredible challenges faced by GPs. With respect to the remuneration models. But I think that the Australian public is well served by the access to GPs, and we have national systems in place that allow for, have severe dependencies to go across to opioid substitution programs. It should be clear to say that this deprescribing guideline is not intending to say that deprescribing should occur for those that have severe opioid use disorders or indeed populations at end-of-life therapy.
Ailey Langford and Associate Professor Carl Schneider, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sam.
My special guests have been Ailey Langford, a research fellow and pharmacist, and Associate Professor Carl Schneider, a pharmacist and a registered nurse, both at the University of Sydney. You can find more information about the first clinical practice guidelines for deprescribing opioids in the description of this podcast. You can find more podcasts from the Medical Journal of Australia on our website at mja.com.au or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening.